Hello.
Hi, Nancy. This is me again.
Hi.
I'm going to give a 3-second pause, and then we're going to begin the interview.
Okay.
Please tell me your name, where you live, and whether you attended the Woodstock 1969 concert.
My name is Nancy Biggs. I live in Wisconsin, and yes, I went to Woodstock.
How old were you when you heard about Woodstock? Where were you living? What were you doing at this time? How did you hear about Woodstock? Why did you decide to attend? How did you get there? Did you go by yourself or with others?
I was 19 years old. I was working as a waitress in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, where I lived. And it was a small town, but there was a college there, and there was a coffee shop there that was modeled after, like the Village in New York City. And a poster showed up there in April. I was at the coffee house, and I was with my girlfriend. And we looked at the poster, and both of us had already been to Chicago to see Hendrix, and up on the poster was Hendrix and Joplin were going to play at this concert. And it was in August. And it listed an address where you could buy your tickets. And we were looking at it, and I kept saying, we should go, we should go. It's around my birthday. My birthday's in August. And we both decided that we were going to go. It was $18 for 3 days. And we thought this was going to be a really good adventure because both of us were raised up here in the woods. We were avid campers. We went camping. So we were like, hey, concert, 3 days camping from Wisconsin, going to New York. So we sent for our tickets. And our tickets, we started thinking that someone had ripped us off for our money because we never received our tickets until I think it was the first week of June. And then both of us needed to keep this quiet because we both of us knew that our parents would never let us go to New York because we were planning, we hitchhiked to get there. The last minute, the morning of us leaving, my girlfriend got busted by her parents. She was not going to be able to go. And she called me on the phone and told me, I can't go. And I said, I'm getting out of here. My dad was a truck driver. He was on the road. My mom had left for work. I was home alone. I left. I took off hitchhiking. I hitchhiked to Highway 51, and then I hitchhiked to Chicago. I got rides from, like, little men and lady that were farmers and, you know, down country roads and everything else until I got into Chicago where a truck driver picked me up. And he connected me in, I think he had to take me to Detroit, and I connected with another truck driver. I got as far as Indiana where I met the guy in the VW microbus who was going to Woodstock to sell candles. And his whole VW microbus was full of all kinds of candles that he had made. And that's how I got there, and I had my tickets.
How long were you at Woodstock? Can you describe the setting and the ambiance? Did anything surprise or shock you? Where did you eat? Where did you sleep? How did you pass the time? Did you know anyone else there? What else can you tell us?
We got there on a Tuesday because I had left early. I didn't know how long it was going to take me hitchhiking to get there. And the guy in the VW microbus wanted to get his little station or his whatever all set up before it opened on Friday. So we got there on Tuesday. What already amazed me when we got there was how big and empty, and there was woods all around and streams, but these people working on the stage and on the sound system, this huge tower that they were working on. It was kind of amazing because it was in the middle of nowhere. That's what kind of impressed me. I mean, I was an avid camper, kind of a tomboy. So, you know, being out in this huge field wooded area with them building the stage, that was the first thing that amazed me, was the stage. And when we got there, there was maybe, you know, maybe 200 people. To me, it kind of seemed like there was a lot of people already in the woods, but there really wasn't, because it was mostly the work crew and things like that, and a few people that had started showing up that actually had tickets, because they actually didn't sell all that many tickets that they got paid for. And like I said, it was nice weather. It was warm. I had a backpack on me, like I said, as a kind of a tom girl. So, and I had gone camping before. I had a tent in this bedroll thing. I had blankets. I had a couple of cans of food, beef jerky, or actually it was venison jerky that my dad had made. I had my clothes, two changes of clothes. So I had my big packing camping thing, and it was heavy. So whenever I got rides, I was, like, really happy because that thing was heavy. And once I got there, I kind of cruised around, and I found a hill-like that was up, because I was like, there could be rain. I'm an avid camper even then. I decided I wanted to camp somewhere, like, up on a hill in case it rained, water runs down. I had my tent up, and I was in my little tent, and the rest of the time, I had taken a book with me. I tried and tried for days. I can't even remember what book I had taken with me, but I had a book, and I think it was Portney's Complaint that I was reading at the time, and that's what I was doing during the day when they were setting this up. Plus, I would go back and meet up with the candle guy and talk to him, see how he was coming along, and getting to know people, and of course, you know, we were like, smoking pot and, you know, drinking wine, and it was a party already. Now, the other thing that amazed me was every day when I'd wake up, there'd be more people. And on Friday when it opened, I had actually worked my way down by the stage because it was opening day. I knew the bands were going to start, so I was kind of like down front with all these other people that were like dancing, and I had, you know, when the band started, it was like it was down there dancing, drinking wine that had acid in it. So, you know, by 8 o'clock at night, I was probably pretty high and tripping. And I just remember all the bands were really great. Some of them I knew. Some of them I, you know, like on Friday, I remember Joan Baez. I remember Sly and the Family Stone when they started. You know, there were certain bands I already, you know, heard of, knew who they were, and then there were other bands that, like, never heard of in my life, you know. So Friday was pretty cool. When I woke up Saturday was like you couldn't even get down near the stage. It was like there was just more and more and more people, and I kept thinking that pretty soon all the people in America were going to be there, and somehow we were going to be able to stop the war or make people like one another and get along with each other. You know, I was on a lot of medication at the time, so my brain was kind of out there as to what the outcome of all this was going to be. But where I was, and, you know, people were really nice. We, you know, if you had food, we were sharing it. If you didn't have food, and you were hunting for it. Water was a little hard to find until they brought water trucks in. Because, you know, with people consuming a lot of wine and stuff like that, and it being warm and hot, you got kind of thirsty. And I don't remember much of Saturday night. I mean, I kind of do, but I kind of don't. And then when the rain started, that was like a really, really terrible, horrible mess. And I remember being cold and damp. I got in my tent. Unlike others who had to stay wet, I had a dry change of clothes in there because I had put my pack in the middle of my tent, and that was about the only thing that was dry was my pack sitting in the middle of the tent where I had a change of clothes. And I know that when I got in there in the middle of the night that I had put on dry clothing, and I had some dry clothing for a little while because I remember being very cold. And the lightning, and Hendrix playing in the lightning, lighting his guitar on fire. I remember that segment. And on Sunday, when it was nicer and the concert was winding down, I kept thinking it looked like a wasteland by then. That was the other thing that surprised me. And then by Monday, when, like, a lot of people were gone, I was amazed at all the trash and all the stuff left behind. And I was also shocked to find out that, you know, people had died. Because where in the area where I was, people got along, or I didn't run into anybody that was, like, you know, vicious or scary or anything like that, because I think I would have remembered that, tripping on acid, if I had run into that. I just remembered a few times that, like, it was hard to find water until the water trucks came. The Hare Krishnas fed us rice and carrots at night and oatmeal in the morning for breakfast, and there were long lines for that, and long lines if you wanted to use the porta potties, because they never did bring enough of those. And so some people were like going into the woods to do their business, which probably wasn't good for Mother Nature at all. But, you know, I don't think they expected those many people. I didn't expect that many people. I thought there were millions there instead of only a half a million.
It seemed like millions, huh?
Yeah, it did, because I mean, my mind was a little distorted, but from all the acid. And so even if you got up on kind of one of the hills where you could look down on, it was just this whole sea of people. And you couldn't, I mean, once you got down there, it was like you would lose your perspective as to where things were, because there were just so many people. It was the biggest crowd I'd ever been in, and I hadn't really since then wanted to be in that. The closest I came was 2 years ago at Sturgis. It's an awful lot of bikers at Sturgis. But I hadn't run into that huge a crowd since Woodstock.
So when did you leave Woodstock?
I didn't leave and get out of there until Tuesday. I stayed behind, and I felt compelled to, like, help pick up some trash. I don't even know if I made a dent. I know that, you know, I stayed behind to help clean up,
mm-hmm.
especially in my area, which consists of everything from, like, wet blankets to garbage, toilet paper, wine, you name it, it was out there. People left their clothes behind, their tents behind, it was unreal. And muddy from the rain. Ugh, God.
Well, how did you get home?
I walked out, like many people did, till I got the road, and hitchhiked back home, which took me longer getting back home than it did. It only took me 4 days to get there. It took me, I think, 6 days to get home.
But the distance must be about 1,000 miles, isn't it?
I think it's a little further than that. I think it's like around 1,200, maybe 1,300.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what did your mom say when you got home?
I think her first explanation was that I was grounded for life for a while. And I couldn't watch TV. I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. Ranting and raving. She'd seen, you know, it had been on TV. You know, she didn't exactly know that I was quite there until I got home, because I had left her a note that said I was going to a fair to watch some bands and then I'd be home in a couple days. And, of course, it took more than a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she was pretty perplexed. And there were talks of that there was going to be a beating, but I don't think I got one.
Well, for now, 44 years after Woodstock, what do you think about it now? And did it influence your life in any way? What do you think the meaning or importance of Woodstock is? Have you met others who also attended, and what do they say?
In all of my escapades and adventures after Woodstock, I only ran into one other person that had been there. We didn't run into each other while we were there. I think it was really, really important at the time for, I think it helped move the country towards realization that we needed to either get out of Vietnam or do something over there to get the boys home. And that we really could get along if we tried. And somehow I think that has the free love thing that kind of maybe came out of that, and that spirit of that got distorted with time. I think too many people put a sexual connotation to all that, as opposed to that we were all brothers and sisters in one place, in one time, getting along, and that we could survive out there and get along and respect one another without, I don't know, overburdening one another with, you know, like, you have to think this way or you have to think, just to get along with each other, that everybody has a space in the universe, and that we're all important in the whole scheme of things. Whereas today, I kind of think it's a little me, 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 me. We're so into computer device and not even talking or writing to each other that we don't even know how to function in that parameter anymore. And I think there's less compassion among people. Others may argue with me, but that's how I feel, that there's less compassion. Somehow Woodstock let the artistic side of me come out, and I became a costume designer. I was in theater. That side of me, like, clicked in, that the arts and things like that were important to me, and making other people happy and compassion and sharing feelings. I mean, theater and stage is a way to help humanity see that and realize that. And I think Woodstock helped me go into that field as I, you know, grew. And, I don't know, all these years, that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. And where are you living now?
I've gone full circle. After Woodstock, I went to Colorado, and I spent a few years in Colorado, and then I went to Hawaii, and then I went to California, and now I am back home. I came home. My father had cancer. He asked me to come home. He wanted to die at home in dignity. I quit my job. I came home. I took care of my father. When my father passed, my mother was still alive. I took care of her for a year, and now she just passed this last October. And so I'm living in the house that I lived in when I took off to go to Woodstock. It's kind of like, you know, a turn of events. I'm not working in theater, but I have my own sewing business here in my house. I do wedding gowns, bridesmaid dresses, prom dress, you know, so it's like, and I'm in a small town, and everybody's like, thank God a seamstress came here. So so that's what I'm doing now.
How many people live in your in the town?
I think like about maybe 15,000, and I might be stretching it.
So,
you know, it's a small town, and it's a small dying town, okay? There used to be a lot of businesses, a lot of stores, a couple of paper mills, Lullaby Furniture here. I mean, this is a big, thriving town, and it, like, deteriorated and shrunk away like kind of a lot of Wisconsin has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we have a we have an emperor for a governor, and, you know, he thinks women should get paid less than men, and they only make minimum wage here, and, you know, they don't have many jobs. I think more jobs are leaving Wisconsin than what are coming here. I mean, you know, but the country's in a lot of strife. A lot of strife. Too many rich and, I mean, yeah. Too many people are rich that don't share, and way, way, way too many devastated poor people that figure nobody listens to me anymore. Maybe that's what we would need another Woodstock for, everybody get together and say, we're not going to go to work until the government and Congress listens to us.
Oh, that's a very good point. Nancy, I really appreciate this interview, and really, you've shared a lot of information about Woodstock, and you're going there, and we're going to publish
personally,
this.
Personally, I would like to thank the guy that started it. I know he got the pantsuit off of him. He didn't make a lot of money, and I'd like to thank every one of the bands and band members and everybody that contributed to it.
Okay. With that, we're going to conclude the interview. Thank you very much.
You have a good day. Thank you.